Hi, welcome to Truth News Radio Australia. Broadcasting to you on the 12th of December 2012. Welcome to all our listeners in Australia and in the US and in all other regions of the planet and in the interplanetary listening realms. You're most welcome to join us and imbibe whatever we have to say for the next 2 hours. Broadcasting to you on the Logos Radio Network. My name's Hereward Fenton, and it's a great honour to be doing this show. Well, I have, in the second hour of today's show, an interview coming up with Mike Holt from Restore Australia. And Restore Australia is an organisation which has been set up to deal with some of the problems in our country in terms of our freedoms, our sovereignty, the quality of life, and many, many other things. And I'll be getting into all the details about that with my interview in about 1 hour's time. So do stay with us for that. In the first hour, I'm going to bring to you a number of stories that are in our news feeds, and we'll be going through some important Australian news and some international news. Basically, whatever comes up and whatever seems to be important is what I will be dealing with. Now, I've got some news fresh on the feeds here on the Chappelle Corby case. We had reports a week or two ago that Channel 9 was planning to do a series on Corby, and some people had thought that this was going to be a positive thing. I, of course, was very sceptical about it, knowing how all of the major television channels operate, and I wasn't wrong. It turned out that the series that Channel 9 is planning to run is based on the work of a Fairfax hack journalist, Eamon Duff, who has done a series of hatchet jobs on the Corby family over many years, and who wrote a book defaming Chappelle's father, Mick Corby, about a year and a half ago, called Sins of the Father. Now, it turns out Channel 9 has decided to base its series on the work of Eamon Duff, which is really quite an abysmal outcome. And it turns out that the Corby family is now suing Channel 9, or at least Eamon Duff. I've got an article here. Corby family say author Eamon Duff has defamed them. The family of convicted drug smuggler Chappelle Corby is suing the author of a book which they say branded them money-hungry and said they were cashing in on her time in a Balinese jail. Mercedes Corby, her brother Michael, and mother Rosalie Rose have launched a defamation case in the New South Wales Supreme Court over the 2011 book Sins of the Father. The book, written by Eamon Duff, details explosive allegations that her father, Mick Corby Sr., who died in early 2008, ran a drug syndicate and was the one responsible for putting the marijuana in her bodyboard bag. And this article here is from the couriermail.com.au. In the statement of claim, the three family members said the book wrongly suggested that they had been a party to her father's illicit dealings. Well, I wouldn't totally trust the Courier Mail here to give you an accurate picture of what's going on, because they also have been part of the just of the feeding frenzy of attacks on the reputations of the Corby family. What I know from having spoken to family members directly is that everything that Eamon Duff said has been shown to be completely baseless, including the claims about her father. So part of the defamation case may indeed be what he says about the family, but I would expect that it also includes statements about Chappelle's father. Of course, the problem there from a defamation case is that Chappelle's father is dead, and dead people can't sue for defamation. So probably for legal reasons, they have to focus on the parts of the book that actually talked about the family, and then they can say, well, you defamed us on those specific things. And just following here from the article, both Mercedes and her mother said that the book falsely implied that they benefited to the tune of more than $2 million from media deals. They claim that the book also wrongly suggested that they were uncaring towards Chappelle Corby and were more interested in their own money and celebrity status than comforting their jailed family member. Mercedes Corby received $50,000 in 2008 for a series of bikini-clad pictures in Ralph magazine. Now, of course, this is something that the media continually brings up to make her look bad. Personally, I don't see a problem with Mercedes Corby getting some money from a men's magazine. You know, so what? Like, it's just... And of course, you know, that has nothing to do... that has nothing to do with the case. So, but again, we see here this being brought up again, which, you know, in the interview there, $50,000, $30,000 from New Idea. And then it goes on to say, Mercedes Corby previously won a confidential payout reported to be as high as $2 million after a defamation case against Channel 7 in 2008. And good on her. You know, good on her for being willing to stand up against the absolute bastardry of Channel 7 in their case against Chappelle, and to take it to court and to force the claims to be tested in court, and then to finally prove that everything Channel 7 said was baseless. I mean, that's it. That's really terrific. And, you know, good on her for getting some money. Look, it wasn't easy to do. It's not easy to take on these media giants. And so the Corby family has really shown themselves to be, you know, quite heroic in their efforts to defend their family and defend the reputation of Chappelle. And as we've documented on this show, what they've been subjected to is a relentless 8-year propaganda campaign that defies evidence, that goes against the evidence, that uses every trick in the book to basically make Chappelle look guilty. And, you know, personally, I don't have a need for Chappelle to be innocent. If I thought Chappelle was guilty, so be it. I mean, I would still be saying, look, she should be let out. She shouldn't be locked up for so long. But I don't need to be on a bandwagon that basically says Chappelle is innocent. And I don't sit here telling you she's innocent. I don't know that. How can I possibly know? I don't have the details. I think there's massive amounts of reasonable doubt. I think there's a lack of evidence to have convicted her. And I know that the drug cartels were using airports and baggage handlers as part of their smuggling operations around Australia. And I know... top-level whistleblowers from the Customs Department have exposed the fact that this was going on and that they thought that Chappelle was possibly innocent because they knew what was going on. They knew that drug smugglers were using passengers as drug mules. But, I mean, that doesn't entitle me to say I know Chappelle's innocent. It's just that there's just all this evidence and all this information that I've gathered. I mean, some people have run the argument that it doesn't matter if she's innocent or guilty. Well, I don't agree with that either. Of course it matters. I mean, if this was just a case of clemency for someone who's in prison overseas, fair enough. But then there are plenty of other people in prison overseas, and I wouldn't be putting Chappelle at the front of the queue simply for that reason. So when people run various arguments about Chappelle, I think it's really important to understand the case and understand what the movement for Chappelle is all about and why there are people all around the world who are so passionate about it. It's because the case against her is so incredibly weak. And that just always needs to be maintained in the foreground, because it's very easy to get confused and it's very easy to let things slip into a very ambiguous kind of mixture of you know, compassion, desire for clemency. People think smoking marijuana isn't really that bad. And all those are perfectly valid, and they're good reasons why she should probably be given clemency if she was guilty. But if it appears that she was convicted on false pretenses, and if it appears that there was a massive drug operation in Australia which has been covered up, then we're in a much bigger, we're part of a much bigger situation, and we need to treat it as a much more a global, kind of globally interconnected on a macro level type of problem. And that's why, again, the Chappelle movement is so big, because we're looking here at collusion and corruption between government and illegal drug trafficking and basically mafia activity in this country. And if Chappelle is released, and I've recently been talking to her uncle, Sean, about this, if Chappelle is released, great. But guess what? We're only then going to renew and redouble our attempt to expose all the lies. We're not just going to say, oh, Chappelle's been released, let's all forget it and let it go. No. And again, that's what differentiates this case from one where we're saying, you know, give the girl a fair go, let her out. We want the lies to be exposed. The purpose of this show is to make sure that the lies are exposed. So keep your eye on the ball there. There's been a lot of information come out recently suggesting that Chappelle could have been released this year, but then it didn't happen. And we're still waiting. So we're hoping to get more info on that soon. And I'll keep you updated on Truth News about that. Now, we've got some more Australian news to have a quick look at here. In the news today, we have from the ABC, the Slipper sexual harassment case has been thrown out. And this one is worth a bit of discussion, I think, because Peter Slipper, the former Speaker of the House, forced to stand down his job during a time of incredible fragility in the government and scandals surrounding various people in the government, making their mandate and their ability to maintain power extremely weak. But we see the case against Peter Slipper has now been completely thrown out, despite the plaintiff being quite adamant and continuing to push his case and saying he's going to appeal against it. I think that there is evidence here for some level of manipulation and corruption within the court system. It says here, Federal Court Justice Stephen Rares ruled that the case brought against Mr. Slipper by one of his staff was an abuse of process, declaring that its predominant purpose was to cause significant public, reputational and political damage. Well, you know, that may well be the case. But, you know, I'd like to actually in the next break, after the break, to get into why I think that there is a... why we have sunk to a really, really appalling level of amoral behaviour in government and in the court systems. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. We'll be right back after this break. Do stay with us. Are you getting fed up with all the disinformation, deception, spin, propaganda, half-truths and downright lies in mainstream news? Looking for something different? Visit Truth News Radio Australia, www.truthnews.com.au, and may the truth set you free.
Change gonna come. Oh, yes, it will.
Welcome back with Truth News. And you know, just listening to that song there, I wonder, you know, is a change going to come? We seem to just be stumbling, falling, repeating the same mistakes over and over again. People are stuck in their inability to do anything, to take any action, to make a difference. And everyone's desperately trying to survive, trying to pay the bills, trying to pay the mortgage, trying to get the kids to school. And yet, you know, a change has got to come. And it will come, but what scares me is that we're going to be pushed into a situation where it comes in a really violent way. You know, there's that famous quote by Kennedy, which goes something like, those who make a peaceful revolution impossible will make violent revolution inevitable. And the longer we delay peaceful revolution, the more likely it is that violent revolution will occur. And of course, violent revolution usually doesn't fix things. You know, it just creates another cycle, and it creates a new set of enemies for various groups in society, and recycles the whole system. Again, you get a reshuffle, but then a new elite forms after that, and a new power struggle emerges. Anyway, just returning to the subject there of the current scandals in Australian politics, I have a clip from the ABC, which I'll play for you, and just we'll get into some of the details of this Peter Slipper case. Here we go.
We do have our court reporter now on the phone. Jamel, explain to us what's happening in court this morning.
Good morning. Well, just a few minutes ago, Justice Stephen Rares has ruled in Peter Slipper's favour. And as we know, in April, this case was lodged against him by James Ashby. And James Ashby alleges he was subjected to various sexual harassment allegations through text messages. And he alleges that there were also unwanted sexual advances, such as Peter Slipper asking him to leave the door open when he was in the shower in a unit in Canberra. Now, today, the judge agreed with Peter Slipper that the case was vexatious, and he said it was designed to injure him. He said some of the allegations were scandalous, and the judge threw it out of court. He also ordered James Ashby to pay the costs involved, but the actual amount of costs is yet to be determined. The matter will return to court at a later date to do that. Now, I can tell you that James Ashby was in court today with his media advisor Anthony McClellan and a legal team. Peter Slipper wasn't in court, but the last time he was, he actually represented himself and was very emotional in arguing for the case to be thrown out.
Jamel, can you go into any more detail with us as to why the judge thought this case was vexatious?
Well, I'm waiting for a copy of the judgment to be handed out, Joe. But in a brief summary that he delivered in the court today, Justice Stephen Rares specified that the allegations were designed to injure. And he said they were designed to damage Peter Slipper's reputation. And the tone of his judgment was that the allegations were a little far-flung. He said they were scandalous in some ways, and the implication was that they were over the top. And he also talked about various conversations that James Ashby had with other politicians and with other staff in Peter Slipper's office. And those conversations are no doubt going to be written up in more detail in the judgment when it's handed out.
Now, I don't know what you think, but I find the way that was presented, the information that we just got there, quite outrageous. And completely lacking in any real substantive information, the judge threw it out of court and said it was vexatious. I mean, sexual harassment cases are heard all the time, and if the man was sexually harassed, whether the government profited from that or not is actually irrelevant to that. I mean, I'm not a law expert. But if there was an abuse of power going on, and if the man was sexually harassed, of course the opposition may have benefited from exploiting that. But that's got nothing to do with the legalities of that case. And I really don't know, and it may turn out that it was vexatious, it may turn out that it wasn't real, but there is something about this that just smacks of the high-handedness of the legal system and the judicial system, that in certain cases they just say, oh, look, that's just rubbish, you know, we don't go anywhere with that. But in other cases, people are dragged down and destroyed by this type of thing. I mean, you know, the man says he was sexually harassed. Is the evidence supported or not? But what's actually happened with media and politics in this country is that we've just descended into this level where truth is no longer valued and facts are just thrown out, and it's just about really the media telling you what to think. It's just this giant kind of mind control kind of, let's just massage the public opinion in one or other direction today. And of course, you know, we have two major parties, and I'm by no means a great supporter of the Liberal Party. But what I've seen with this particular government is just the most unbelievable manipulation of processes, the most unbelievable covering up and backing of clearly corrupt people, such as the Thompson affair, which... In that case, obviously, it's a man who was very clearly involved in very, very corrupt activities, and you know, there does appear to be pretty solid evidence there. But again, that's been covered up; it's been misrepresented, and then when people attempt to bring this up in Parliament, it's called misogynistic. You know, you're a misogynist. And then Julia Gillard has a famous speech in which she says, you know, how terrible it is. Because in the Craig Thompson affair, certain people have weighed in and appear to be misogynistic against Julia Gillard. Actually, I'm conflating a couple of different issues there. The Craig Thompson affair is the one about the AWU scandal. The Julia Gillard affair with the misogyny is to do with people accusing her of being involved in setting up a slush fund that, again, was actually siphoning money for illegal union purposes. There are actually so many different scandals, it's very hard to keep track of them. But what I see is a government that's just manipulating, controlling, using all the cronies and using all the people in its arsenal to manipulate the media and to cover things up. And it really, really does disgust me and sadden me to see this happening. And to see us being subjected to it with very little ability to do anything about it, very little ability to restore normalcy, to restore rationality and facts to the media and to news. Now, I'm going to move on actually with some international news shortly, but let me just alert you to truthnews.com.au. And if you'd like to actually have a look at our website, do log in, do join the site. We actually now have a membership page, and you'll be able to actually join the site and leave comments. And if you'd like to actually contribute and call into the show, we welcome you to do that as well. And I'm just trying to get the page up here. It can be very hard doing this show, trying to get everything happening at the right moment. Sometimes when I want to load a page, it doesn't load, and it's very frustrating. But we have call-in numbers, 1300 153 372 if you're in Australia. We're going to break. Stay with us. We'll be right back with some international news after the break.
To go before you reach home. punchline after punchline, leading us all, leading us all.
Hi, welcome back. You're tuned to Truth News Radio Australia. Great to be with you today. Now, I'd like to talk a little bit about the Syrian situation. I want to just start by referring to an article here by an Australian journalist. And again, this is not something that that I'm bringing to you because it's good, because it is useful in terms of knowledge. But again, I want to highlight the way in which the media, and in this case, Paul McGough, chief foreign correspondent at Fairfax, is basically conning you, and I want you to be outraged, because particularly because Paul McGough, who used to be the chief, the correspondent for the Middle East, and did a lot of good writing on the Iraq War, has turned into an appalling and very, very crude propagandist for the Western-backed powers and what I would just call the New World Order, really. I'm amazed by it, because I know the man's not stupid. I know the man's done a lot of, you know, pretty good work in the past, and was bringing clarity and was restoring some truth to the situation during the Iraq War. But his coverage, and I've noticed this dates from the Gaza flotilla a couple of years ago, when many ships headed over to Israel, with many of them with journalists aboard, and of course were repelled by the Israeli Defense Forces. And Paul McGough was on that ship, and I noticed from that moment his style of his reporting changed. He was promoted to chief correspondent for the Fairfax organization, but then he just from then on he just seems to parrot the most abysmal nonsense. And I'm going to give you an example here from the Sydney Morning Herald just last week. After Assad, the real bloodbath could begin. Western nations may have little say on what unfolds in Syria. As haunting images and reports of diplomatic frustration crowd accounts of the horror of life in Syria, memories of blood-curdling conflicts from the too recent past, in which Moscow and Washington were key players, have been a break on international calls to see off the diminished dictator of Damascus, Bashar al-Assad. Now, let me just break down that paragraph for you. That is an obnoxious piece of poisonous war propaganda, beautifully packaged. And the last sentence there, a break on international calls to see off the diminished dictator of Damascus. See off means kill, folks, okay? See off means assassinate, murder, kill, extrajudicial execution. And the way he's phrased it, it's like, oh, you know, they're being a bit lax in their calls to have this guy murdered. You know, he's the democratically elected president of a country, okay? Sure, there's problems with the democracy there. There's problems with the democracy everywhere, okay? In every country that has elections, okay? But I know he has a massive amount of support in Syria. And I know even the people who are against him don't think he's that bad. You know, even the people who have been oppressed by him in the past have supported him, including a lot of the groups that came out on the streets here in Sydney. People in Syria don't want him to be just seen off, you know, just quietly, you know, shot. And how dare Paul McGough talk that way? It really does make me very, very angry. So let me just continue with this obnoxious piece of propaganda drivel. Despite reducing his country to a charnel house, again, how does that make you feel? Despite reducing his country to a charnel house, can the Syrian president hang on in what is now a regional proxy war? Or, despite impressive military gains in the past few weeks, can Assad's opponents topple him without full-throated international support, military, humanitarian, and financial? At the White House, a chill runs down Barack Obama's spine, with every demand at home and abroad that he stops pussyfooting around and opens Washington's weapons stores to the Syrian rebels. Again, I just have to quote on the language here. Pussyfooting around because he won't endorse murder and like intervention in another country and like just basically just be a total criminal. Oh, yeah. Gee, it's really uncomfortable for him pussyfooting around like that, isn't it? And again, this is just the language of a journalist, but this is one of the top journalists in Fairfax, actually. I mean, chief foreign correspondent is the top, one of the top positions in the organization. This guy's probably on at least 500 grand a year. And he's writing in a way which is like it's a war crime in itself, the way he's written this article. But it's done so cleverly, and the pseudo-intellectual people who read the Sin Morning Herald will sit down and go, oh, yeah, why are they pussyfooting around? Why aren't they getting rid of Assad? Yeah, gee, And they'll think they're quite superior because they're party to this very kind of pseudo, this intellectual style of the intellectual newspaper of the country. Anyway, it's just very, very, very disappointing to see that. As I said, you know, Paul McGough, a guy who did quite a lot of good articles in the past, I know he's smart. Maybe his massive salary increase on becoming chief foreign correspondent went to his head. Maybe he was threatened. Maybe on that ship to Gaza they did something to him. I don't know. It's very, very... And it has to be pointed out. It's only on shows like this that we can do that. That we can actually, you know, expose the poisonous level of disinformation that we're getting from the media. But anyway, just on that same on the same subject of Syria, I want to actually play to you a clip here from RT, which did a very detailed interview with President Assad. And it's worth listening to. I'm certainly not going to bring the whole thing to you. It's about 25 minutes long. But there's actually quite a lot of really good material in it. So I'm just going to line that up. And I'll just try and turn the volume down while we play the ad there. But this interview shows the president of Syria extremely intelligent, extremely capable of dealing with basically any questions, and the questions aren't easy. They haven't questions that's basically been set up to make it comfortable for him, and he does very well. And I just think I'd like to play some of that for you. So I'm just going to set the playhead here to the beginning, and we'll give you some of this clip here from RT speaking to President Assad.
President Bashar al-Assad of Syria, thank you very much for talking to RT today.
You're most welcome in Damascus.
So, you know, many people were convinced a year ago that you wouldn't make it this far. But yet again, we're sitting in a newly renovated presidential palace and recording this interview. Who exactly is your enemy at this point?
My enemy is terrorism, the instability in Syria. This is our enemy. It's not about people. It's not about persons. The whole issue is not about me staying or leaving. It's about the country being safe or not. So this is the enemy that we've been fighting as Syrians.
You know, I've been here for the last 2 days, and I had a chance to talk to a couple of people from Damascus. Some of them say that whether you stay or go doesn't really matter at this point anymore. What do you say to that?
I think for the president to stay or to leave is a popular issue. It's not a personal issue. Mm-hmm. And the only way to define this term precisely is through the ballot boxes. Mm-hmm. So it's not about what we hear. It's about what we can get through that box. And that box will tell any president to stay or leave very simply.
I think what they meant was that at this point, you are not the target anymore. Syria is.
I wasn't the target, I wasn't the problem. Mm-hmm. Anyway, you know, the West always created enemies. It was the communism, then it became the Islam, then it became Saddam Hussein for different reasons, and now they wanted to create a new enemy, Bashar. So they said the problem is the president, so he has to leave. That's why we have to focus on the real problem, not to waste our time listening to what they say.
But do you personally still believe that you are the only man who can hold Syria together and the only man who can put an end to what the world calls a civil war?
We have to look at it from two aspects. The first aspect is the Constitution, and I have my authority through the Constitution. According to this authority and to the Constitution, I have to be able to solve the problem. But if we mean it that you don't have any other Syrian who can be president, no. Any Syrian could be president. We have many Syrians who are eligible to be in that position. You cannot link the whole country only to one person always.
But you're fighting for your country. Do you believe that you are the man who can put end to the conflict and restore peace?
I have to be the man who can do that, and I hope so. I have. But it's not about the power of the president. It's about the whole society. Mm-hmm. I have to be precise about this. President cannot do anything without institutions and without support of the people. So the fight now is not president's fight. It's Syrian's fight. Every Syrian is involved in defending his country now.
It is, and a lot of civilians are dying as well in the fighting. So if you were to win this war, how would you...
We're just going to break there. I'll leave that, and you can investigate that. We'll have that on our show notes. Quite an interesting interview, and very well worth listening. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. We'll be right back after the break. And, of course, do stay with us for hour two for our interview with Mike Holt from Restore Australia. Back, you with Truth News Radio. It's great to be with you today. And I'd just like to welcome to the studio Damon Crowe once again.
Hello all.
Yeah, Damon, look, you know, you had a chance to listen there to the interview with Syrian President Bashar al-Assad. And we were just chatting in the break about what we think, the sort of the hopelessness of it. And of course, he recognizes that there's nothing much he can do about it, and he's very open about it. He's basically saying, look, this is not about the Syrian people against the government. No, this is about powers that are sending endless, you know, waves of insurgents into the country, and they're going to just take over. And he almost acknowledges he can't really stop it.
Yeah, it's the same old routine. I don't even need to study this one because you see the same thing over and over again. I think actually Sun Tzu said that anybody uses the same strategy over and over again to beat their enemies will surely be seen for who they are, and their remains will be scattered to the four corners of the earth. Well, these guys continually use the same methodology over and over again with monotonous regularity, and we are so unbelievably dumb to watch it continue on. Now, the Syrians are clearly would be wound up. I'm telling you, I hate to be living there at the moment. It must be just awful. But how stupid are we to watch this go by and see the crap that's reported in the mainstream media on what happened there and what happened in Iraq and what happened in Afghanistan and what happened in Egypt and what happened in Libya? It's the same crap over and over again, and we do nothing about it.
And we just sit back in horror. You know, those of us who know what's going on, and, you know, I mentioned there before about what the Sydney Morning Herald was writing and Paul McGough, the chief foreign correspondent. And, of course, you know, those few of us who can see through the media are just absolutely horrified at what our supposedly smart left-wing intellectual news broadsheets are telling us. And, again, it's like it just makes it even more unbelievable. I mean, do you feel like you're living in some kind of a dream world? It's just like, it's just real.
Yeah, it is surreal. But they've owned the newspapers and all the media for 200 years, 300 years, 400 years. Ever since they've been controlling print media of any description, they've owned it. It's been one of their most fundamental founding strategies to adopt. And The only thing different this time is you have the internet, and you do have the ability, if your brain is functioning, to search the internet to get information that the mainstream media isn't giving you. However, unbelievably enough, not many people trust their ability to do that. I quite often get, where did you hear that? On the internet. You know, like you're the idiot. These people are listening to mainstream media thinking that they're intelligent. I mean, the psychosis is amusing, I've got to say.
Yeah, look, Damon, yeah, in the second hour we're having Mike Holt on from Restore Australia, and we're actually going to be talking about what things can be done and what actually can be done. You know, there's a variety of organisations that are trying to change things, and some of them that I agree with, some of them that I don't. Of course, you know, we've got the environmental groups, and we've got organisations like GetUp, which I believe are a complete fake,
exactly.
which sort of just co-opt people to almost undermine and prevent any kind of real social movements happening. But, you know, as I mentioned, you know, before, we've got this problem of, like, the longer it takes for a peaceful revolution to occur, the more likely it is we're going to have a violent revolution.
Yeah, all the organised things like Occupy Wall Street and, as you mentioned, GetUp, they're all the fake opposition. Right, there is no real opposition. Right, we're just disorganized. We don't have generals. We don't have secret societies on our side. We're not organized. We don't get together. We don't have meetings. We don't have rituals. We don't share common beliefs. We're just a bunch of individuals that are going to see their country and their freedom just taken from them. And because we're disorganized, because we're half asleep, that is unfortunately inevitably what is going to occur, and there's nothing you or I unfortunately can do about it. I just don't think, I think it's too little too late now. I think we're in the final stages of a third and final act, and I think that'll come down in the next year or two. You can see we're very close to them completing this third and final act. Well, they'll usher in a new world government, political system, financial system, and there'll be nothing we can do about it. And people like you and I will be tracked down and will either be put in jail or killed or whatever. If they finally get to where they need to get to, anybody who speaks out against this regime is killed or eliminated or marginalised. That's the standard mode of operandi. I can't see why they'd stop doing that now when they're at their best. I mean, this is the best they've ever been. I mean, these guys must be able to taste it. They must be already you know, ready to celebrate when they do this, because who's going to stop them from doing what they're doing? Well, there's no way knowing you can stop these guys from doing what they're going to do. Nothing.
Yeah, I mean, let's be realistic about it. I mean, you know, it doesn't look like it's going to happen right now, but it never does. I mean, if you looked at the world in, say, 1938, you would have said, oh, well, everything's going to be okay. But the evidence was there that things weren't going to be okay, right? Mm-hmm. But you could look around. I mean, you know, in Nazi Germany in 1938, it was doing really well. It was a successful country. You know, people didn't think Hitler was a terrible person.
The most powerful country in Europe.
But Hitler was on the cover of Time magazine. It was all good. It was positive.
Yeah.
And, you know, and the politicians were saying there will be peace in our time and all this kind of stuff, yeah. Right? So when the shit is about to hit the fan, it doesn't look like it's going to hit the fan necessarily unless you look carefully at the indicators.
Yeah, because they control all the media and they control essentially the illusionary view that the people have of the world. So people are viewing the world largely through their goggles that they've installed. They've put the glasses on your head. It's the TV, the newspapers, the movies, the education system, the political system, the financial system that essentially creates this illusionary world that these people buy into. And so most people are only viewing the world through their goggles. They're not viewing the world through their real eyes, because that's an awoken person. And we're talking probably only half of 1% of truly awoken people who really have figured out that we're crossing the galactic core and all this is completely illusionary. And these guys, by the way, work in galactic cycles. So if you think these guys are not cocoa about astrology, you're kidding yourself. And we're in an extremely interesting precipice in time right now. And these people are coordinating, synchronizing global geopolitical events and financial events with cosmic events, and we are about to go through the most amazing cosmic event that you'd really see in a 26,000 year period. I mean, we're crossing the galactic core, and that's a fact.
So, well, today is the 12th of the 12th of the 12th. Do you see any kind of are you concerned about that at all? I only just noticed that myself, and
yeah,
I thought,
my
oh
wife
dear.
Mentioned that to me, and no, I didn't even know it was there. Like most days, they just blend into each other, and you know, I got no idea what a date is in their mind next. You know, who does? These guys work completely differently from you and I, but I guarantee you it'll have something to do with numerology and it'll have something to do, which is the same as astrology anyway, but I think it'll be a kooky number. I still think the 3rd of the 3rd, 2013, for some reason, is a good date for these knuckleheads, but it could be anything, let's face it.
Now, you were saying before, Damon, and I kind of agree with this, is that like the most effective, thing that will bring about change is actually when people simply, the more people simply become conscious of what's going on.
Yep.
And that simple awareness would change everything.
Yes.
But I mean, do you think it needs to reach a kind of threshold? Is it like is it 100 monkeys type scenario?
Well, I've heard various theories now. I can't remember the exact number, but I thought it was something like 6 or 9% is all you need to awake. Like if 6 or 9% of the leaders of the sheep, basically, that were renowned by the pack, decided to push off somewhere else. Then that herd, would just follow those leaders. So I think there has been reasonable studies there that there aren't, you know, probably less than 10% of people are leaders, and most people are followers, and they're probably was born true in the animal kingdom as well. But you know, there hasn't been a great leader, and you know, it'd be nice to have a you know, something like Muhammad or Jesus Christ or one of these sort of people that have apparently you know, ventured into the physical realm come in this moment in time. If it's the most important moment in time, you would think that these leaders would present themselves, and not that I'm looking for a savior, because I think the salvation comes from within, and I think we all have to try to get ourselves personally to where we need to get to. That's the whole reason we're here anyway, and we can't lose sight of that. It's a personal journey, and the only thing you can control is yourself, and I certainly can't awaken anybody, but you can awaken yourself, and you can reach maximum potential yourself, and you've got full control over that. So if you really, you know, revel in that power, then everything comes back into perspective, probably everything comes back into balance, because we can't control any of the things that are about to happen. We can't control the events that are unfolding at the moment. We can simply observe them. And people that are interested in finding out more about something, then I think we can lend a hand with that. But if people haven't figured out things like 9/11 yet, or you know what happened to Woodrow Wilson or Abraham Lincoln, or you know, go back in recent history in the last 200 years in America, and you'll find out who the fingerprints of the people who are running the show. Have a look at who created the Nazis. It's all very obvious. I mean,
isn't it incredible? Another thing we were talking about before is that people can be aware of certain things, but through down a narrow path.
Mm.
And you were describing how you were at a climate change conference with Lord Monckton, and the conversation started to stray into other areas, and the people who were quite well informed about the climate change scam and all the lies there simply were just absolutely horrified at 9/11 and wouldn't even look at it and just walked away.
Yeah. So I mean, that conversation got there because when we were talking to them, we'd seen endless evidence that the whole thing was a complete and absolute contrived scam. And the next question was, well, who would do this and why? And they looked at me like, that's such a bizarre question. I mean, here they were realizing the whole thing's a total scam, and they were focused on people like Julia Gillard versus, well, this is a global thing, so come on, guys, it's much bigger than this. And they couldn't figure it out. They couldn't join the dots to a bigger picture.
So there's, you know, there's degrees of awakening as well, and you know, it's something that we probably won't be able to talk about today because we're just at the end of the hour, and we will be back for the second hour with Mike Holt from Restore Australia, and Damon, you'll be with us for the second hour.
Cool.
And so do stay with us. It's going to be a really interesting discussion, and we're going to get into what's happening in this country and what people are doing in this country to try and turn things around. So you're with Truth News Radio Australia. Don't go away.